I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We go now to Utah for an update on the story about what some people are calling a hit list. It's a document containing the names of 1,300 people with Hispanic surnames. The document suggests that these are all people who are here without proper authorization. The list contained a great deal of personal information, the names of more than 200 children, addresses, social security numbers, and even the due dates of pregnant women. It was sent to the media and to law enforcement agencies by a group calling itself Concerned Citizens of the United States. The group demanded the immediate deportation of all those on the list. Governor Gary Herbert yesterday said two state employees, both women, were responsible for collecting and disseminating the list. One was a temporary employee. She's already been fired. The other is a permanent employee who has been notified she will be fired. She has the right to appeal her dismissal. The governor is expected to hand over the final report of the internal investigation today to the attorney general, who will determine if any federal laws were violated. So we've called him. Joining us from Salt Lake City is Utah's Attorney General Mark Schertleff. Attorney General, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to chat with you today, Michelle. Thanks.
First of all, could you just set the table for us? I mean, a lot of attention has been focused on Arizona, where the issue of illegal immigration has surfaced in a very profound and provocative way due to recent legislation passed by the state legislature. Is the issue similarly a front burner and emotional, hotly debated in Utah?
Oh, it absolutely is, Michelle, because there's, in fact, I heard a lawmaker yesterday say that some 100,000, I don't know where we got the number, 100,000 illegal aliens who were in Arizona are now in Utah fleeing that state because the law is going to affect there. We are neighbors. We are in the same transportation corridor. So there is, and there will be legislation this year by that legislator and others to try and do a similar law. We had a huge summit yesterday with some 30 participants that talked about alternatives and how we're going to address the issue here in the state of Utah.
Now, the Salt Lake Tribune is reporting that, as we reported yesterday, that just reported there are two women who have been identified as the people who compiled this list and disseminated this list. Are others believed to have been involved?
You know, at this point, we're the law enforcement investigating agency, and we're waiting for the governor's office and his folks to wrap up whatever information they have, and then they're going to turn it over to us. We're not going to prejudge the information. In fact, sitting here right now, I do not know the names of the two women you mentioned, and we want it that way because when we begin a criminal investigation, it has to be done correctly, innocence presumed, and we're going to start fresh with whatever they hand off to us.
But we do understand that investigators spoke with at least eight other state employees who may or may not have had knowledge of this scheme. But none of them have been identified as being a responsible. I'm just curious, why is the governor's office the investigative arm and not yours?
Yeah, that's clear. They're not the investigative arm. Mm-hmm. What they've been doing is been doing a fact-finding. They're not investigating criminal misconduct. They're looking at facts. And it's similar to, let's say you were in a corporation and there was some allegation that somebody committed some theft or some kind of crime within the organization. The organization would look to see what happened and then turn that over to a law enforcement agency to begin a criminal investigation. That's what's going to happen here. And we need to keep it separate because we represent state agencies. But in a situation like this, we want it separate. They're going to turn everything over to us, and we will then begin anew. We'll talk to those people. We don't know if other people might be involved. We will do that with law enforcement officers doing the investigation.
What are the charges? The charges that the individuals are potentially facing here?
Yeah, and this potentially is obviously all dealing with privacy laws. State and governments are charged with often keeping a lot of private information, and so there are very strict laws with regard to protecting the privacy of all people. And in particular, where you are a state or other government employee tasked with protection of those records, and you are violate that trust and somehow involved in disseminating that information, revealing that information, there are some serious allegations. Depending on how you obtain it, it could be rise to the level of felony-level type crimes. And in this case, because we're talking about medical information, potential federal laws have been violated as well. And if so, we will turn that information over to the U.S. Attorney's Office.
A member of a group called the Minutemen suggested that these employees are whistleblowers and that therefore they should be applauded for their efforts to prod the government into doing that, which it should have been done already. What is your perspective on that? And do others share that point of view?
You know, they do. Pretty much across the board, this list was condemned. That includes by other members of the Minutemen, include by conservative legislators with the attitude that, you know, that's not the way we go about doing things, this, that illegal conduct does not justify other illegal conduct. And yet I'm hearing every day on my Facebook, on emails, phone calls, that a lot of people are sympathetic to Eli Colley, the Minuteman project director, who said that, that these people ought to be praised as patriots. And our response to that is, no, we don't allow committing crime. I mean, would you justify, because somebody may be here illegally, beating them up, committing, some other crime against them? And the answer is no. But in this situation, some people feel that these people did something that was important to reveal. And that's just not the way we go about resolving this immigration issue.
I do take your point on that, but there are those who do wonder whether, if it is in fact accurate that some of the persons on the list are here without proper authorization, will that information be acted upon?
Well, the list was originally sent back in April to ICE. Obviously, immigration is a federal issue, and responsibility for enforcement and potential deportation is a federal government responsibility. Right now, I'm a state official, and I'm tasked with enforcing state laws. And if any state laws have been violated in collection and disseminating the list, then our responsibility is to investigate and prosecute. And that's what we're all about. But to put out names of children and women who are pregnant and due dates, and you mentioned some people are calling it a hit list. I've even used that because it appears through the cover letter that went out that it is intended to intimidate, to get people to look at each other, to watch people in your neighborhoods, and to report and to get out this personal information puts people in fear and potentially terrorizes them. And that's just, again, not the way we should go about resolving this immigration problem.
Well, it's also, as I understand it, we spoke earlier the week to an activist in the Latino community there who's a former official who said that some of it's just simply false, that a number of the people on the list are legal residents of the United States. So it just isn't even true.
That's exactly right. And that's the problem with when you put something like that out like that and it says, and out of the 1,300 names, only two are non-Hispanic surnames. That it does, and it says that they're all illegal, and we've been watching these people, and that we're watching more people, and we're going to continue to collect information, encourage people to do the same. And that type of response to this is not acceptable. And the good news of it is that, as I say, most people in authority, most lawmakers, most opinion leaders have condemned the list and said, you know, we need to elevate this debate. We need to go higher than this. This is not how we do things in this country. Certainly, we don't want to be seen in Utah as putting together blacklists or hit lists. We got to stop the political rhetoric and the hate mongering and the implied and outright racism and get to the bottom of it as a problem. The federal government continues to fail to do their job in securing the border and taking care of this problem, and states are riled up about it. We need to find, you know, Utah is not Arizona. We want to find a uniquely Utah way to deal with the issue.
And to that end, what happens next? You mentioned that there was a summit hosted by Governor Herbert yesterday to talk about this issue. What were some of the results of that meeting?
Well, we try to point out, and most people agreed, that illegal immigration at its heart is an economic issue. And so an enforcement-only bill like what Arizona did, where it's all about just rounding people up and getting them out of here, as long as the border's not secure, it really is to no avail. In fact, it could create problems, more problems for law enforcement and for protecting the public. And so we need to look at ways to deal with the economic issues involved, with the fact that people need jobs, with temporary worker permits, but to do so legally and try to drive. If you pass an Arizona-style law, all it does is push people into the shadows. And we want to incentivize those who are here illegally to, if they want to be here to work, to do so legally and through the legal proper channels. So that's where we're going towards perhaps a Utah worker authorization permit, or else, as I recommend, working with the federal government within the current H-2 visa laws.
You've been on record favoring a guest worker program that would create potentially a path to citizenship for people who are living in the country illegally or without proper authorization. And as we mentioned, there are other people who in favor a more an approach more oriented toward enforcement. I wanted to ask, after this incident, and I know you have, you know, your perspective on it, I'm just curious how you think the debate is moving. I mean, sometimes when you have a story like this, it kind of gets people to sort of change their minds and think about more expansively. Sometimes it just hardens people's position. And I'm just wondering what effect you think this whole story has had on the political climate and on this debate in Utah.
Well, let me just first clarify your statement. It's been reported that I'm favoring a work program with a path to citizenship. That's not accurate. There are people who want to work here who don't want to be citizens, and there are certainly those companies and industries here are farmers and ranchers and dairymen and construction labor and so forth who do need temporary workers from other countries to come in and fill jobs and without wanting to be citizens, just to work. So let me just clarify that. But
so you
really,
say a guest worker program without a path to citizenship, that just
exactly.
Guest worker program that would regularize that kind of labor that's needed on a temporary basis.
Yes. Okay. Similar to Becerra, back decades ago, that it wasn't about citizenship. It was about having people come up and work and then go home. Your question, the bigger question is, what has been the result? And I think it has elevated the debate. It's put rhetoric aside, and people are saying, oh, this is a serious issue. We need to make a decision based on the facts. There's a lot of misinformation out there about crime involved, about economics, about the impact of illegal immigration, and it's all over the board. We need to get to the bottom of it and study the facts and not go on passion or rhetoric. Certainly get the loud, angry, hate-filled voices out of the debate and really do something unique in the state of Utah. And I think we could be a model for how we ought to approach the problem throughout the country.
And finally, before I let you go, what about the whole question of how this information was acquired to begin with? I don't know that that's under your bailiwick, but what about the fact that these workers were able to access this kind of information as easily as they apparently did? I don't know how easy it was to do, but what about that? Is there any discussion about how that could be prevented from happening again?
Well, Workforce Services manages a lot of federal welfare programs, and federal law does allow some benefits to flow to people who are even here without documents, who are here illegally. And that information is, as far as personal information, is kept private just like everybody else's. And there are strict rules about even what we can reveal. We had to go to our legislature to get authorization when a company reports back to Workforce Services with a Social Security number that does not match the person's name who is in their employ. We couldn't do anything about it. And we've since made efforts to be able to notify potential victims of that, and we're trying to clean that up and hold the company responsible.
Okay.
But that's down the road.
All right. We have to leave it there for now. Thank you
right.
so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure,
Michelle.
Mark
Shurtleff is the Attorney General of the State of Utah. He was kind enough to join us from member station KCPW in Salt Lake City. Attorney General, thank you again.
You bet.